Blog Talk Radio.
Don't tell me what I've got to think or say. That's none of your damn business anyway. Don't tell me now I need security. There's only one thing you can do for me. Give me liberty. Give me liberty. Give me liberty. Give me liberty. I'm not afraid of foreign enemies. They cannot take away my liberties. I'm not afraid of things that they might do. From what I see, I'm more afraid of you. Give me liberty. Give me liberty. Give me liberty. Give me liberty. You hide behind the flag, but here's a fact. I see right through your phony patriot act. I think it's time you finally figured out what my America is. How it's all for my own good. I'd tell you where to shove that if I could. I'll say this just one time, so get it right. I won't give freedom up without a fight. And when we've got it, we've got everything.
Give me liberty. Give me liberty.
Give me liberty.
Give me liberty.
Don't tell me what I've got to think or say. That's none of your damn business anyway. For liberty, yeah, yeah. It's been our dream so long. The one thing that makes us strong. You know we can't go wrong. As long as we have liberty, yeah. It's like a beacon bright that shines through the darkest night. We'll make it home alright. We follow the light of liberty.
March of Liberty radio show. Hope everybody's doing well out there. I'd like to remind you the chat is open and going. Feel free to log in and join us in chat. I'd like to give a quick shout out to our listeners here from Blog Talk Radio and from our Hear My Thunder community. And possibly friends of the Article 5 Convention that are listening in. Like to kind of jump right in here. We've got our special guest, Bill Walker. He's here for round two. We enjoyed talking to him the first time and definitely look forward to talking to him now. I guess I should introduce myself. I'm Jason, coming out of Houston, Texas. I'll be your host today. Gary's out this weekend, and hopefully we'll have him back next weekend. But like I said, we have our special guest, Bill Walker. Are you there, Bill?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. Excited to have you back and looking forward to talking with you again.
How's the weather down in Houston?
It's nice and sunny right now. Not too bad. We don't have no hurricanes no more, so we're doing all right.
Oh, that's good. Sunny up here, too, in Seattle. So I guess that the weather's doing cooperative for us then.
Yeah, for a little bit, another month or so, if we're lucky. How have you been doing?
Well, I've been doing fine. I've been listening to all this lovely work by the Congress and, talking about $700 billion like everybody else in the country. That's been seeming to be the main topic of conversation and around here. And I find it kind of interesting, that Congress sits there and talks about spending $700 billion, and the American people, if they don't want to do it, don't have a thing to say about it, and kind of relates to the subject that I talk about, our Article 5 Convention.
Yeah, I'm very interested to get your take on how the Article 5 Convention would help in this situation. I think I kind of have an idea, but it'd be great to hear from you on it. This is some interesting times that we're looking at here, and I know that the congressmen and senators are getting absolutely flooded with emails and faxes and phone calls right now, and people are pretty upset and really speaking up at the moment. I don't know if it's going to be quite enough. It doesn't look like it's going to be. Unfortunately, it only takes one senator to filibuster this. I just don't know if any of them truly have what it takes to do it. Kind of wishing Ron Paul was a senator right now, because we might have a chance of somebody actually blocking it. But unfortunately, it looks like a nice little Paulson racket and Bernanke racket are going to get pretty much exactly what they ask for.
Well, the problem, of course, is that you have to remember in this whole thing with the Article 5 Convention, Congress has just flat out broken their oath of office. I mean, it's a criminal violation, and I don't mean that in a figurative sense. I mean an actual criminal violation. And
yes,
there's lots that an Article 5 Convention, if had been called when it's supposed to have been called, could do, and it could still do today. I mean, just taking one example real fast, if you take a look at the Depression and you look at today's markets and you look at the bubble of the tech bubble back in 2000 and all of these other problems, they all relate to one basic area, and that is that people are allowed to buy stock on margin. In other words, I got $5 and I'll buy $500 worth of stock and then I'll pay it off because I know this stock's going to go up type thing, and then it doesn't. And when you get enough people doing that, you run into the problem that we're looking at today, some $700 billion up front to pay for gambling, basically. I mean, that's all margins is. There's no reason that a convention couldn't consider an amendment to make it simply illegal or unconstitutional to do investing not by margin. In other words, you got to pay what you have. You live within your means, as it were. That's just one idea, that off the top of my head that somebody could consider. There is also the balanced budget amendment, which should have been passed years ago, which would have made the situation much better, because even if we did have to do something like this with a balanced budget in play, when it back in the 80s, we'd be having probably maybe half the debt that we've got now. So
yeah,
those two would make a difference.
Yeah, with the true Article 5 Convention, I mean, that depends on what they want to do, but I mean, all of this mess really could have been stopped.
Well, sure.
The Fed,
you've got to remember, in all of this, Congress refused to obey the Constitution. That's the number one point about an Article 5 Convention. They put themselves in a position now where People can say, well, they don't want to have this, or they complain, but all the people can do is say, oh, please, Congress, please, please don't do it. Oh, please don't spend our money. Oh, please. And that's it. That's always, oh, yes, and by the way, when you run up for election, we'll won't vote for you. And the guy goes, eh, big deal, you know, who cares? Because he knows that he's got the math on his side of about 90 to 95% repeat.
Reelected, yeah.
Sure.
And that's the thing. I mean, you know, we say they have ignored their oath to the Constitution, and, I mean, that's the reality in this whole matter, is that most of the problems that we see today is because of our lack of appreciation for the Constitution.
Sure, and
most of our problems wouldn't even be there if every bill was weighed against the Constitution before it was ever brought up for a vote. I mean, that's the sad reality that we live in, and the even sadder reality is that most Americans don't even respect the Constitution at all. And
yeah, but
I don't know how they lost how we lost respect for the Constitution, seeing how it's what got us here.
Well, to give you an idea, let's just take the step of the $700 billion one step further. Everybody's saying they don't want to have this, or a lot of people are saying that they don't want to have this. They want to have something else. Okay, fine. If a convention had been called when it was supposed to have been called, one of the issues that would have been before the people and probably would have eventually passed is an initiative referendum recall federal system. In other words, just like most of the states have these days, you'd have one at the federal level. Okay, now let's just say that they have that $700 billion bailout, and they pass it. Okay, right now the people can't do anything, but you put a referendum out there, and there's two things that would happen. If it passed, the markets are even going to be stronger because they know the American people are behind it, and if people had better ideas or more workable ideas, they could get them before the people to consider in an initiative. And if the Congress still refused to deal with it, they could exercise that recall and just pull them out of office. The point being, American people would no longer have to beg that, oh, gee, Congress, will you please do something? The American people would be saying, all right, this is the way it's going to be. This is what's going to happen. This is what we want. This is how we're going to do it. Totally different in the world.
Yeah, it'd give us our power back. And that
yes.
It would be a whole different world, that's for sure, because
let me
ignore us quite often.
Well, let me put it this way. Do you think that we would be in this position if we had an Article 5 convention? And the answer is no, because people would have started to put pressure on the state legislatures years ago so that we wouldn't be in this position. They would have started this up. They'd have said, look, we can't do this kind of investments. We want to have some kind of amendment that does X, Y, and Z, whatever solutions they saw. The point being that the Congress and the states would not be able to just put this under the rug or, you know, ignore it because the convention is mandated to be called. So therefore, before this got really rolling, with assuming that they were calling the conventions what they had, and they discharged the 628 applications you got on file right now from all 50 states, so you've had that convention, so you're back down to zero applications. Assuming that had happened, you would be in the position where an issue like this would have been handled before it got to be a crisis situation. But no, not Congress. Oh, no. They'd rather ignore the Constitution, veto the law, commit a criminal act, and now ask us to pay $700 billion in money that the best I can hear any of them saying is they hope it will work.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I find absolutely atrocious in this. You know, the Senate House Banking Committee, they were holding a hearing, and Bernanke and Paulson were there, and I forget the senator's name, but he stood up and he said, you know, if this was a venture capital fund that you were coming and proposing this to, we would laugh you out of here, basically. You know, you have no plan. You're sitting here telling us that you have no plan. You just want the money, and that you're going to use you're going to experiment and see what you can actually get done. But you have no plan that you're actually putting on paper. And there isn't a venture capital fund in the world that would approve one penny for you. And you know, still here. We don't have an actual plan from them, and they're still asking for the money, and Congress is still thinking about approving it. It's baffling to me. You're just going to come in and just, you know, here, give me some money. I'm going to rip you off, and you know I'm going to rip you off, and that's okay. Just give me the money, and people going along with it just baffles me.
The thing is that this, and this is the reason this is so significant to a convention is this. The 1929 proposal by Wisconsin came directly out of the time that the Depression happened, right around in that time, 1929. And they wanted the people to be able to have an input into the financial decisions that were being made that eventually caused the Depression. The problem is this, that the Congress has just adamantly refused to even obey the Constitution. We're the first group in history that has made the actual effort to actually compile the text of the applications. Not even Congress does it. I remember trying to contact the members of Congress, and basically they just laughed at me. They thought it was funny that I was asking about a part of the Constitution be obeyed. That's their attitude towards the Constitution. And if you notice, not one of them has raised the issue. Not one speaker that you hear about has raised the issue of, is this constitutional? Do we even have the authority to do it?
Well, Ron Paul did raise that in the congressional meeting. I guess he laid into them pretty heavily, but he's known for doing that. But they all just laugh at him, too. You know, him, a single voice there really doesn't do anything in Congress. You know, he needs some backup, and it's sorely lacking. It is funny because what they're proposing is completely unconstitutional. The original proposal was a atrociously unconstitutional. And I'm sure what's the latest proposal is just as bad. But originally, you know, Bernanke proposed that Paulson proposed that he be given absolute authority with no oversight of any court or administrative agency, actually barring any review by a court or administrative agency. And if that's not unconstitutional, I don't know what is.
Well, the point is that there is nothing in the Constitution that states that Congress has the authority to buy a private company, except eminent domain. And, I mean, if they want to do it by eminent domain, the problem would be that these companies would therefore have to be completely public. And, for example, the AIG, I think it's AIG is the name of the company, would be an insurance company. It would mean that everybody would get free insurance.
Yeah.
Because it's a public company. Just like, for example, if you have a fire department, you don't pay as such directly for a fire department. I mean, you don't walk up to them and, you know, say, here's $50, go take care of my fire. You pay taxes, they come and do the service. You know, so I mean, if you pay taxes, you get the insurance. Same logic. But the point is that an Article 5 convention, and I mean, to just review to those people who might not be familiar with it, basically all it is proposes amendments. Now, it's not going to be able to deal with this immediate financial crisis, but it can deal with making sure it doesn't happen again. That is for sure. It can get down, look at it's what has allowed this to happen, propose amendments, and have, assuming those are ratified, making sure it doesn't happen again. Because right now, you could have 6 months from now that could ask for another $700 billion or another $1 trillion or whatever.
Well, they're going to. They're going to. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about that. The $700 billion is nowhere near close to the number that they need. That's just reality. And you're talking about $13 trillion in mortgages here. Some of the best economists out there estimate that 10 to 15% of them are virtually worthless. They're probably worth, you know, 30 cents on the dollar. That's virtually worthless.
So
$700 billion doesn't even cover 10%. So anybody who thinks that we're going to get anything but the absolute crappiest paper out of this is joking themselves. We will end up with the worst paper that is out there. And the worst paper that is out there is worth more than $700 billion. So they will be back. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Right. And the problem is that it just makes it to the point that the United States will be literally taking over industry after industry after industry, to the point that they won't be regulating, they'll be owning. And beyond that is another problem with these mortgages that everybody has ignored. The reason that these things are worthless is because the people can't pay them. Why not just simply renegotiate the mortgages and lengthen out the length of the term with a fixed rate so that the people have more time to pay them?
That might not be too bad of a proposal. I mean, my problem that I see with that is that the value of the asset is fictional. These houses, if you take and renegotiate out a $800,000 mortgage on a property that is truly, really only worth probably $250,000.
Oh, no. You misunderstood me. No, you don't change the amount of the mortgage. No, you don't touch that. You simply make it a
30-year, go to 50-year or whatever, right?
Or 50 or whatever. It's still going to pay the amount of money. The bank immediately becomes solvent. You've spent no money.
The problem with that is that the person holding the actual mortgage has no incentive to pay because the mortgage is worth more than the asset. So, and we're not going to see a return of these assets to those prices, at least not for quite some time. It's going to take decades of inflation to get those houses back up to that kind of price because it was just so unrealistic in the first place.
The point is that an Article 5 convention could sit down and, being on the outside, could sit down and take a look at questions like this and ideas where Congress is not going to. I mean, that's the advantage of a convention.
I would like to see a convention in the area of bringing some of these people to justice, basically throwing them in prison because these are crooks and thieves and criminals, and that's the reality of it. And,
well,
you know,
if you had one ambitious attorney general or even an assistant attorney general in one state that wanted to be called, instead of the attorney general of such and such state, wanted someday to be called Mr. President, all he'd have to do is bring a lawsuit, and that would trigger a chain of events that you would be able to look right down the barrel of having most of these members, if not all of them, members of Congress looking at jail terms. Now, once you've done that, you're also going to be able to start looking at all their pals, buddies, companions, and so on and so forth, which includes the group you're talking about. Because, like I said, it's not exactly going to be rocket science for this ambitious person to do it. All he's got to do is read public record. I mean, your own Solicitor General of the United States has admitted that they committed a crime. It doesn't get much easier in a court of law than that.
No, and that's one of the things that you brought up on our last show, that it just kind of dumbfounded me, that all of the – every single member of Congress at the time that they voted on this, they committed a crime, and they're all – the crime is very serious.
Violation of oath of office. And now, because of the court ruling that says that they don't have to obey the Constitution because it's a political question doctrine, now a little article that nobody cared about, a little thing about Article 5, they don't care anything about it. Now that opens it up where now the entire United States, because they don't have to obey the Constitution, it's a political question, same principle. Now where we sit. $700 billion looking down the barrel. Exactly the same situation, and it all started because of that Article 5 lawsuit, which was simply asking them to obey the Constitution.
Yeah, what a novel idea. And people have to keep in mind that this $700 billion, this is on top of $1.1 trillion that we've already allocated towards the mess. And the reality is there is no simple solution for the mess that we're in. This mess needed to be stopped at least 30 years ago. But we're going to continually throw money at this and get nothing out of it, really. And they want to talk about the alternative is too bad. Well, in my mind, the alternative is exactly what we need. We need the system to crash. We need the fiat currency system, be exposed for the fraud that it is, and we need to return back to a hard asset currency. And it's going to be brutal, and it's going to be rough, and in my mind, probably a couple million people in America will literally starve to death from it. But if you string this out and you postpone it, you're just growing it from a couple million people to tens of millions of people, because the reality is this will all wash out in the end. There's no way to stop this. You're dealing with math, and math has laws that cannot be broken, and the math will win out at the end of the day. It's just a matter of time. The longer you postpone this, the longer you draw it out, the worse the end scenario is going to be. And I wish people would realize that. You know, I mean, these problems are very basic math problems, really. If you want to boil it all the way down to the bottom, you're dealing with math. And mm-hmm. and math just doesn't lie. It cannot work. You've got the problem of the Federal Reserve issuing our currency at debt, and then the banks beyond that taking and multiplying every dollar they get by 10 through fractional reserve lending. It's just a joke, you know. And then their main argument, Paulson's main argument, is that, you know, they want to get credit flowing again. And how many people in America don't realize that that was our problem, that we're living beyond our means? So if you get credit flowing again, one, who's going to be there to take the loans? I don't know too many actual Americans that can afford to take any more debt on. You know, you're not going to, if you do get the credit spigots going and people taking the loans, then you're just blowing another bubble that has to burst again. And it's going to be an even bigger bubble, because under the fiat currency system, to really get it going again, you have to inflate exponentially. And so that means that the next bubble is going to be even bigger. And if you can get beyond that bubble and blow another one, then that bubble has to be even bigger. Eventually, it just blows up, and it's going to be just devastating. And I want people to really realize that, you know, we're talking about this here in America, but this is not just an American problem. This is a worldwide crisis. The whole world has been duped into getting onto a fiat currency system, and the whole world is experiencing this problem. Our inflation rate here in America is nothing compared to the inflation rate across the world. We're barely seeing inflation compared to a lot of countries across the world. This is going to come to a head whether people want it to or not. It's just it's the way it is. I mean, you can look through history to see that this happens.
And the ironic part about it is that a lot of it, well, not, you know, no, nothing is a panacea. I mean, and there's no way I'm saying that an Article 5 convention is a panacea. Mm-hmm. But a lot
that
of
could
it.
Help.
No question about it, because, for example, like I said, well, two big things that would have occurred if there had been conventions, which would make a total difference in all of this. There would have been the repeal of federal income tax and a balanced budget. Mm-hmm. Now, that forces the government to live within its means. Well, if you know as an investor that there is no bailout because the government doesn't have that much money itself, you're not going to do the dumb things that you've done. I mean, if you know...
Would have never taken WaMu, even for free. Even for free, they would have never taken Washington Mutual. They only did that because they knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that they were going to get this money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I mean, Washington Mutual a year ago, year and a half, was like in the 40s, in the 45s. And, mm-hmm. you know, now it's out the door. But the point I'm making about Article 5 convention, this is something that people have to understand, is that a convention it has its place. And when you have a government that will not solve, will not listen to the people, and will not act in the people's interest, that's why the founders created the Article 5. They didn't create it for the government, as it's tried to do in its various legislations or in its discussions, to sit there and just ignore it. They didn't create it so that they could use it to pass their own little political ideas, because they approve and veto everything, which is what the Congress has tried to do in any legislation they've ever done. It's, if you read the legislation, it gets down to just as thinly veiled a veto as possible. The last one that was discussed was the Blithely Amendment, and basically it called for a already existing piece of legislation that said unless Congress votes against this by two-thirds in each house, you don't get a convention. Well, you know, duh. And I mean, you know, in every one of them they have the same thing, that Congress has to approve everything the convention does by two-thirds, and there's nothing in the Article 5 that says that. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that. And this is the situation that, you know, that I was worried about when I started dealing with this back in the 90s with an Article 5 convention, because you could see this breaking away from the Constitution, and it's just accelerated since that lawsuit of mine, and they basically, the courts went in and said, oh, yeah, under the political question doctrine, they can decide if they're going to obey it. Well,
yeah,
everything's a political question.
Could ignore the law.
Well, yeah, and the courts have no problem with it. They just blithely go through it. It's like you might have heard about this lawsuit with this guy up in New York. I read where the courts just flat out ignored it. They just figured, oh, yeah, we won't even allow him to discuss the question of whether there is any constitutional authority in doing this. And sooner or later, like I agree with you, sooner or later this is going to come home to roost, and it's going to be a very big roost. It's not going to be, you know, I most people today that are alive cannot remember the Great Depression. There are some are still around. They're pushing up there, but I mean they still remember it. And I mean, you can't imagine a situation where a person in Germany had a wheelbarrow full, literally, of Deutschmarks to go buy a loaf of bread. I mean, you think it's a joke, and it wasn't. I mean, the inflation rate went nuts. It was like, if I remember correctly, at the worst time in Germany, it was like something like 100 million marks for to the dollar. It was incredible. And the same thing in the United States happened, but we are in a situation where I don't think that people understand what will happen with, for example, their credits and everything else. If this credit market folds, what's going to happen is immediately the banks are going to come in, and these credit card companies, and they're just going to say, okay, give us our money. We want mm-hmm. your money now. And we'll say, well, I got $100,000 in credit. You know, they'll say, fine, give us your house, give us whatever. You know, they'll take everything. Same thing, the businesses are all out sitting on credit to try to pay off their debts. Well, great, they're going to have money that's worthless because nobody's going to be able to buy anything, so that takes care of that. But the bottom line is a convention could have been held, should have been held, and could have proposed amendments that this wouldn't even be on the discussion table. A balanced budget alone would have made an entirely different situation. And like I said, there have been other proposals by the states that were designed and intended to keep such things under control, and the Congress just flat out ignored them. And now we're sitting in a situation where, unfortunately, it looks like we're going to go down, you know, down. And
we're going to go down in the history books.
Yeah, we're going to go down in the history books, and history's going to come back and look at the whole thing, and in 50 or 60 years, they're going to look at these records, and they're going to say, well, okay, Congress, why didn't you just call a convention? Here's the answer. Or here was part of the answer. You know, what did you do?
In your opinion, you know, if the Article 5 was something that was, used right now and was, you know, something that Congress accepted, would there not be, with this bailout plan and everything, would there not be a flood from the states to call an Article 5 convention at this moment?
I think that if the Article 5 convention were called right now, you'd be amazed how quiet and quelled everything would get around the world. I think it would mm-hmm. buy huge amounts of time because, first of all, being new, by that alone, everybody's just going to kind of say, okay, well, let's just see what happens here. So that's going to make everybody calm down, not start selling and fanfetting because they're doing it. Plus the fact they start reading about, okay, well, now, wait a minute, this says a balanced budget. It's got 38 applications. Well, that's enough for ratification. Well, duh. You know, it says repeal the federal income tax. It's got 39 applications. Okay. And, you know, it'd go down the line.
I think it would have a huge effect on the world because ultimately we kind of convinced the rest of the world to go to a fiat currency between us and England. We kind of duped everybody into getting on this fiat currency thing.
Well, yeah, and another problem is that most of the world has held conventions. That's, I mean, there has been, we uncovered a book on the internet. It's on our site now, www.foavc.org. And that book lists all of the conventions that have been held since 1776. In the United States alone, I believe there have been, if memory serves me correctly, about 690, something along that range, from 1776 to 1916. That's when this book was published. That doesn't include the 20th century. So you probably could safely say there's been between 750 and maybe 800 conventions in the United States alone to present day. Mm-hmm. Not one of them has ever done a runaway. None of them has ever done the things that people talk about. The states and everybody are functioning just fine. And if you take a look, because of these conventions, keeping up with the different stresses in the states and add another 200 around the world, these countries are doing quite well because they've been able to keep up with the changes in the situations as they've had to adapt their governments and form governments to it. Meanwhile, we sit with a Congress that is got a 9% approval rating. That's before they do this. I don't know what's going to happen when it gets to 3%, because then they're down to where it's plus or minus and it could be zero. And I've never heard of a negative popularity. But anyway, you're looking at a situation where an Article 5 convention would bring a lot of stability, because all of a sudden the people would say, hey, wait a minute, we're going to have a chance to do something here. We're going to have a chance to actually get in and have our say in a way that we know these politicians are not going to be able to have anything to do with. That right there is going to bring a lot of confidence to a lot of people. It's going to offer a chance, a real chance for change. Not the idea of, well, if you elect me, you know, I'll bring change, and then, you know, 5 seconds later the guy, after he's elected, forgets all about it. A constitutional amendment, when it's passed, is real change. It's going to be there. It's solid. It's a rock. It is going to happen. And it also has the immense advantage of people could then sit down and actually approach this problem in a positive manner. You don't gain anything by panic and sending a bunch of emails that you're not even sure somebody's reading on the other end. But when you're dealing with an Article 5 convention and you're dealing with delegates and so on and so forth, and delegates that are there dealing with the issues that are going to be raised. In other words, if a guy runs as a delegate now with this $700 billion, I guarantee you he's going to have to discuss amendment proposals and what he would vote, what he would suggest, or what people say. I absolutely guarantee you he's going to have to deal with it as an issue. So rather than the member of Congress trying to pull it off so that he just can get elected in 6 weeks, this guy, he's running on that. He's going to run on that issue. He's going to be having to deal with it. He's going to have to deal with the question of a balanced budget. He's going to have to deal with the question of repeal of income tax. He's going to have to deal with the fact that somebody says, well, you know, how much will my credit card debt go up? Oh, you might have it go to the interest from the 11% that you got now, maybe to 25%. You know, and I mean, there'd be drop silence in the room. But the point is that the delegate can't avoid it, because that's what he's there. That's his job. So you are going to get a response. And the guy's not going to run for re-election. There's no re-election, so he's got no reason not to be upfront with people. He's not going to accomplish something by avoiding the issue. He's just simply not going to get elected as a delegate.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because that's one of the problems right now is the up on the Hill is the conflict of interest is immense. You've got Paulson and Bernanke standing up there saying that we're doing this for the taxpayer, that the taxpayer is our greatest interest in this. Did we forget that Bernanke runs a private corporation that is for profit, and his obligation is to ensure the most profit? That's a huge conflict of interest, and let alone all the other congressmen and senators that have massive conflicts of interest as well, because of their business ties and the people who support their campaigns and their friends. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean,
no Article 5 convention is going to be a panacea. You're going to have people that know powerful people. But let's also get realistic about something else. You you've got a situation where these powerful friends may try to, in my mind, would tend to avoid this. It's one thing to try to, you know, buy this politician so you get his vote type thing. It's another thing when you're talking about trying to control the Constitution. People tend to get up on their backsides real fast when you do that. And if you're any type of business or something like that, that's the last thing you want to be going around about you, or even the taint of it. So, you know, in its own way, the subject matter, that is the Constitution itself, is different. And it also, you've got something else that you have to realize, because it has to be passed by such vast majorities. I mean, you're talking two-thirds proposal in the convention would have to favor it. Then you got three-quarters of the states that have got to go for it. You're not going to walk in and pay two guys off on the street corner with a promise to, you know, get them elected to the next job and get an amendment passed. It just isn't going to happen. Yeah. You know, you're going to have a pretty solid backing of the American people, and that comes because the people have had a chance to think it out, work it out, and talk it out, and argue it out, and come up with an amendment proposal. Now, maybe, you know, the idea I threw out won't work, but I guarantee you, with 300 million minds working on it, a solution's there. It's there. There's people a lot smarter than me in the room that, you know, they know economics a lot better than I do, and I guarantee you there's people out there that have got the solution. And if they had the forum of an Article 5 convention, I guarantee you they could get it solved.
Yeah, I would
imagine. They're not being listened
to. No, and the thing that I found atrocious about these hearings and everything, that it was just Paulson and Bernanke up there. These are the guys who created this mess, got us into this mess. I mean, they don't have all the credit of creating it. Their predecessors have huge hands in it. But, you know, they're in charge of this mess, and they've watched over it. They knew it was coming. To stand up there and say that they didn't see this coming is that they're lying under oath. They knew it was coming. I mean, come on, the CEO of Goldman Sachs doesn't understand how all this stuff works. I mean, you're either extremely incompetent or you're lying to me, one of the two. But
well,
then,
I mean, you're talking now. You're talking Congress. It is possible for them to multitask, so they could be both liars and incompetent. I wouldn't say that's not impossible.
Yeah. Well, okay, it's being proven. But what kills me is, you know, we have all these economists in our country, and we want to make sure that we come up with the best solution, and we're not going to talk to anybody else except these two architects of this disaster. It just baffles me. You know,
well,
you've got a tremendous amount of smart people here that they can tap and call up, and they'll be happy to come up there. I mean, there's a list of 190 leading economists that have signed the letter to Congress. Any one of them would be more than happy to come up to the Hill and testify.
Right. Well, the thing is,
it's crazy.
The thing is, in an Article 5 convention, my personal, and this is my own personal, this is not FOABC, but I have always personally favored a virtual convention, that is like we're doing here, online, where you would have the whole thing held online, because you can set it up where all you're doing with amendment proposals is exchanging information. You write an amendment proposal, you could have ways to have discussion of it, you certainly could have live testimony and so on and so forth that could be streamed, so on and so forth. I mean, the technology is there that you don't have to get everybody in a room physically in Washington, D.C., and, you know, disrupt everybody's lives that's involved and mean that only the guys that are super rich and can afford to take the time off, and so on and so forth. So in other words, you could get a pretty broad base of people because they would stay. Well, the same thing goes with testimony. Article 5 convention, particularly the first one, is not going to sit there and be like Congress. It's going to sit there and try to be as open and as public as possible, which means if it's discussing something like this, those 150 guys are going to have a chance to have their say. They're going to be able to post testimony. They're going to have people be able to read it. They're going to be able to make specific suggestions, plus, you know, people that will read it come up with ideas. The point is, it would be a much more public, fair, open forum than Congress is doing. Because Congress, if you stop and think about it, does not listen to the American public. I mean, if you really take a look at it, it doesn't listen to it, because that's what that 9% popularity rating is saying. In the ultimate exam, it isn't any particular issue. It's they're saying the government of the United States is just not listened to it. Well, that's why the founders created the Article 5 Convention. If you read Federal City 5, Hamilton says it, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically says, look, the politicians, meaning the national rulers, will tend to hold on to their powers. We've created this so that if they do and they don't want to do it or they can't do it, you can do it. We can
this was a backstop to ensure that.
Well, you could have it either way. Yeah, you see, now the thing is, now you got to remember, this is not like a secondary or secondary level. I mean, you can propose under the Constitution by either method. The applications, if the states apply for 34 applications and the Congress hasn't discussed the subject at all or the issue at all of a particular amendment proposal, it can go through from a convention without ever being seen by Congress. It's either or. But the point being that Congress has come around to say, well, no, we're just going to hold on to all this political power. Well, here we are, $700 billion of holding on to it, if we're lucky. And I don't think we're going to be. I think it'll be.
No, it started out as 3 pages, and it's over 100 pages now. I mean, how much other extra spending have they put in there? I mean, you got the $300 billion mortgage bailout, which they said would be a great thing, didn't do a darn thing. And there's a little line in that little bill that states that all credit card transactions are to be reported directly to the IRS by 2009. So how many things like that are crammed into this now that it went from 3 pages to over 100 pages? I mean,
this is Congress. You see, and here's the key of something else that a lot of people don't realize the advantage of an Article 5 convention. It's not like you're going to get six guys in a back room somewhere, you know, meeting over the top of a bar. This is going to be a public convention. You're going to have more coverage at that convention probably than any other event, I would say seriously, in United States history, maybe excluding the moon landing, the first moon landing.
And
they're going to have this stuff out. You know,
and another benefit is that it's a single issue. They're not going to have all this extra stuff.
No, they're going to have, if you're talking about dealing with the issue before the convention, and there's several issues. There's about 17 of them they deal with. But the point is, there would be an amendment proposal. You're going to have that issue before you. It's going to be in the amendment. You're not going to be able to slide it quietly through. You know, well, we'll stick with, you know, no. The only thing a convention can do is propose amendments. So whatever is in that amendment, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be there for everybody and his brother to read. And I mean, most amendments are a page and a half.
Yeah, they're very 14th. Simple.
Yeah, the 14th Amendment is about the longest one, and it's about 2.5 pages typed, and it's the longest one as far as most amendments are. The 16th is one sentence, for example, the income tax, two sentences if you count the power of Congress to enforce it with appropriate legislation. Most of the other amendments are one or two lines. So you're not going to have all of these intrigue and subtleties. And even if you did, you think the people are just going to ignore it? You think that, for example, let's just say that they did propose that there was no margin investments. Okay, let's just say that was an amendment. Take it as an example. And also somebody said, but I want to get, 5% for my special investment firm. So you're going to put that in the amendment? You think somebody's not going to read that? I mean, they're going to read it. It's going to get noticed. You know, it's the difference. When it's one typed page, people tend to read it.
Yeah, and they're not trying to buy off votes. You know, right now in Congress, you've got one guy that's against this, and they go, okay, well, what do you want? What can we put in this that'll get your vote? And that wouldn't happen in an Article 5 convention.
No, because they have nothing they can offer because, it would be a public type situation, and the guy is going to sit there and he's going to say, well, there's nothing you can offer me because we're dealing with this issue. I mean, what are you going to do? You say you're going to support this issue over there? Oh, well, that's really nice and everything. You know, that's about the biggest horse trading they could do. And when it comes to amendments to the Constitution, people get their backs up. They're not going to compromise just to try to get something through. And also, you wouldn't have this same attitude in a convention you've got in Congress that we've got to do something. No.
Yeah.
Convention doesn't have to do anything. A convention could be just as constitutional if it was called and you have the election, everybody comes together and they look at everything and they say, you know, we really don't need to do anything. Okay, let's go home. Well, they've satisfied the Constitution. They were called, they met, they went home. They don't have to do anything. So the attitude would be, by just the nature of the convention, would be, if we're going to do something, what is best for the country and the Constitution? Because we don't have to do anything.
And that would be a nice thing. You know, Paulson keeps on calling for a clean bill, and that would be some clean action that we're definitely not going to see out of Congress.
Nobody's talking about an amendment to actually give Congress the ability to do this. There's not one person that's mentioning pass an amendment to the Constitution that gives Congress the ability to buy companies.
Most likely be the opposite.
Right, and
make sure
certainly nobody
them, but make sure they couldn't do it.
and not only that, but technically, if you read the Constitution, just to give you a point, Paulson technically can only give written advice to the President of the United States. The President, if anybody, would have this authority, not Paulson. I mean, just if you read Article 2 of the Constitution, the presidential powers, the department heads of the various different departments, they have to give it to them in writing. Technically, Paulson can't do what they're talking about. To give him just this ability to spend this money requires, by the Constitution, would require that it be a spending bill. In the Constitution of the United States. And, you know, they can't just take this $700 billion and hand it over to Paulson. By law, they can't do that.
No, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, there is actually no proposal on exactly what he's going to do with the money. That's insane.
And the thing is, here we have in our records, we show it in our website there, www.foabc.org. We show balanced budget. Now, what would a balanced budget do in this circumstance? Well, number one, a balanced budget would
be dead on arrival.
Well, yeah, it'd be dead on arrival because there's no national emergency of war. Right. And if you read the text of these balanced budgets, even the ones in Congress, they said, well, unless there's a war, you know, you can't break the balanced budget. What comes in is what goes out. Well, $700 billion isn't going to come out. But more importantly, once the federal government is living on a balanced budget and paying its debts down, it's going to translate over to Wall Street. They're going to do the same thing. But do you think would you think that Congress would call it? And of course, now, what gets me about all of this is that Congress has 100% political cover in this. And the other thing is about a convention that a lot of people don't realize, that I can make a promise here and I can absolutely guarantee it. I can have a 100% money-back guarantee on a convention. I mean, that's something that no other politician can say, but the convention can. Let's just say that they propose an amendment to deal with this problem of the $700 billion. And they say, okay, we're going to do X decision. Okay, fine. X is passed. Everybody ratifies it. Oh, yeah, that's the greatest thing in the world. Okay, 2 years later, they look at it and they say, that's the dumbest thing we ever did on this planet. What the heck were you thinking of? Okay, so you say, well, gee, what are we going to do? If it's passed by Congress and the payoffs and stuff, it may never get fixed. But with an amendment, you go up to Congress and say, we want to repeal it, just like they did with the 21st Amendment. Or you call a convention call, we want to repeal it, they repeal it, you're right back where you were.
Yeah, it's not going to be replaced with more BS legislation. There's only one thing you can do to it, and that is repeal it. And if you want to propose something else, then you have to take a complete separate action.
Right,
you're not gonna get BS papered on top of BS.
Like I said, let's just say that they just said that you can't invest in margins, that you have to live within your means, and they found that that doesn't work. Fine, you can go back and remove it. In other words, the point is that a convention has another advantage that is not in Congress. These people are up against the wall with an election. They're up against the wall with they got to do something, and then, you know, they always have to do something instantly. That's their attitude, you know. Doesn't matter what we do, just as long as we do something. Well, like I said, a convention doesn't have to do something, and it has no deadline. If it takes them an extra week to write an amendment, it takes them an extra week. If it takes them an extra month, it takes an extra month. In other words, their basic constitutional situation that they can only propose amendments means that they should do something, but do it correctly. And that's not what Congress's obligation is. Congress is very political.
Not at all.
And that's the advantage of the convention.
Yeah, there's so many benefits to a balanced budget by the government. Like you said, the companies wouldn't run their budgets the way that they do because, you know, right now, running a budget the way that these companies and the government is running a budget is illegal. It's fraud. If you tried to run your budget that way, you'd go to jail.
Right.
You know, the thing is then if government wasn't willing to run a fraudulent budget, then they would definitely be willing to go after companies that did run fraudulent budgets.
And
one thing I want to bring up here, because you talk about, you know, the repeal of the income tax, which I'm definitely all for. One of the things that this is going to do, if this bill that they pass, the $700 billion bill, if they pass this, and with all the other money that we've thrown at it, we are going to be very close to having 100% of the people's tax dollars going towards paying the interest payment on our debts, which that's pretty scary. I don't know how people feel about having every dollar that they spend in taxes to the government going towards paying interest on debt. That's pretty serious. And then that also, you know, goes to the fact of that because the government no longer is receiving any tax dollars from the American people, it's all going to the interest on the debt, that their budgets are going to be even worse, that their budget overruns are going to be even worse. It's a double whammy, and it's pretty sick. I don't know how many people would be against repealing income tax if it got to the point where every penny that we pay in taxes is going to servicing the debt of the nation. I think that you get that word out, and people might really want to repeal the income tax at that point.
Well, the let me give you an idea about the balanced budget, how many times the states have asked for, because I'm looking at the computer screen right now, and Daniel Summers, who's also a member of FOAVC, has just posted it. And he has done some parsing with the computer of different applications for different issues. And he says that there is 136 Article 5 applications by 38 different states for a balanced budget general call for an Article 5 convention. Remember, the issue is not why Congress calls. The issue is whatever the state wants to put in it. The actual call of a convention, the every one of them is for the subject of a convention call, which is what the language says. On the application of about two-thirds of the states, Congress shall call a convention. In other words, if you apply as a state, you're applying for them to call the convention. You don't have to. You're not applying for a particular amendment. So that means that there have been 38 states. That's enough right now for ratification. I mean,
yeah, we've had enough for ratification.
Right. That's not. It takes 34 for the convention call. It takes 38 to ratify, and you've got yourself right now. This moment, you've got. It's been asked for. Let's see. My math is a little slow here, but approximately 8 times. Doing it in my head right, that it's been asked for to ratify 8 times. 8 different times, and I think I'm right. Let's see, 130, no, excuse me. I'll be wrong. Let's see, 3, 4, 5, about 5 times. I'll take it back, 5 times, approximately.
Okay.
About 5 times it's been asked for and could be ratified by the states 5 different times. And
wow.
Income tax is about the same. So, I mean, these are things that have been asked for by the states. Now, I can guarantee you with this kind of debt situation and debt limit and so on and so forth, the states and people would come up with amendments to more directly deal with this specific issue. But do you think that they're going to have a chance to even get a public hearing? No. I mean, this is two guys walking into Congress and saying, you know, open up your piggy bank and taxpayers bend over and give us $700 billion and we'll write a blank check.
And we'll be back in 3 months for more.
Right. And like I said, if that one application from Wisconsin, just the one, was in place right now, the American people, if they wanted to, could put a stop to this cold. Not talk about elections. They could be sitting here right now getting ready with a referendum or an initiative or a recall and be dealing with this on an actual in-charge situation. Because I guarantee you if those were in the Constitution, somebody would be working initiative, referendum, or recall. There's no question in my mind that people would do it. And it would make a totally different situation because do you think that Paulson, if that existed, and he could be recalled from office, do you think that he would be sitting there saying, yeah, I want everybody in this country to take a risk of increasing your credit card debt?
Unfortunately, I think he has the audacity to do so, even if he was looking down that barrel.
But even if he did,
but he wouldn't
the point is, you know, the American people could pull the trigger. They could just, you know, there could be the recall. Wisconsin gave no parameters on that particular one. If you read the actual text, they just said they wanted the three powers. They never gave any specifics on that one. They just brought the issue up. So, in other words, there's nothing to say that the recall couldn't be for bureaucrats, for Federal Reserve, judges, whatever. There's absolutely nothing that was defined. The point being that in this situation at this time, Congress would be dealing with a totally different situation if it knew that those powers were out there held by the people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that I was so baffled by last time we talked as well was the lack of action and the lack of noise coming from the states on this issue, on the Article 5 convention issue. I mean, the silence is deafening, and I just don't understand it. I mean, I know that there's reasons for it and all, but I just don't understand it because there's a lot of these people that are in charge of these states at the state level that really somewhat feel the same way that we do. And for them to just sit and remain quiet, I just don't get it.
Well, part of it, I suspect, is because people like the John Birch Society, those groups there, and others have spread a lot of falsehoods over the years that people tend to believe. The problem is when you start forcing them, when you say to them, okay, back it up. Where's your evidence? Where's the proof? Like we have done at FOAVC. When I talk about the applications, for example, I'm talking about text that I can actually pull out and say, here's the actual text. When we talk about this application for initiative recall referendum, I've got the text right there. You can actually read it. You can just go on, go down the list, 628 applications, and you go down and find it and read it, and there it is, you know, full public view. You can't. These opponents did this for their own personal, political, short-term reasons. They couldn't defeat the proposal, so they defeated the methodology. The situation was that people wanted the Equal Rights Amendment, ERA, and so there was a whole bunch of argument over it. Well, they couldn't get it through Congress for various reasons, so they went to the convention. Well, these opponents to it, rather than argue the ERA, decided, well, let's just attack the convention, and so they did. They lied, and there was nobody to challenge it. Well, great, that's wonderful, but the problem is that in doing that, they've now made a situation where when it's really, truly needed, and of course it's been needed all along, but now you're dealing in crisis situations that could have been headed off and still could be. I mean, you could pass, there's no time limit on an amendment proposal. Either way, you can write an amendment proposal, and assuming that people, didn't fight it. In other words, they said, yes, we need this right now. So you didn't have the opposition. Everybody did agree you could need it. You could have an amendment proposal passed in a week and be part of the Constitution. There's nothing – I mean, would it happen? Not likely. There'd always be opponents. But the point I'm saying is there's nothing that says that it takes years to get it into the Constitution. The only reason that does is because people don't rush it. But, I mean, if you came up and people said, well, we do not want – X to happen, or we do want X to happen. The wheels can spin very quickly if about three quarters of the nation were in favor of it and that particular amendment.
Yeah, and did you watch the Rally for the Republic Campaign for Liberty launch that they were having up in Minneapolis at the same time that the Republican convention was going on?
I didn't see that. I heard a little bit about it, but I didn't actually get a chance to see the whole thing.
It was a great thing, and there was a lot of great things said and everything. There was one area I was wholly disappointed in, and I would have never known about it or known to be disappointed in it if we hadn't talked to you and met you, and that was they had the John Birch Society there, and they specifically basically called you guys out again and were basically talking smack about the Article 5 convention, and that was the thing I was wholly disappointed in. And you know, the crowd was cheering and everything, and I'm just sitting there shaking my head like, you know, oh, my God. You know, if I had never met you, I would have never known to be skeptical of what was being said, you know. And I forget his argument, but they were basically touting their accomplishments and stopping what you guys are trying to do. And I was just shaking my head.
And the thing is, that, you know, to show how fair and true these people are, did any of them ask for an FOAVC representative to be there to present the other side?
No, I wish they had. That's the only knock that I have on Ron Paul, really, because, you know, I'm a big fan of his, and I think he's got some great ideas that would really help this country.
He was one of the people
who voted against it. I couldn't believe that when you said that, and it baffles me as to why he would do such a thing, but... that's the one knock that I have on him is that he's
well.
Done that.
I'll tell you, actually, went a lot farther with Ron Paul than any other member of Congress. Ron Paul, I personally contacted his office. He was sent letters. If there's anybody who's more culpable in Congress than Ron Paul, because he's been specifically singled out to do it. And I remind you, since we're talking about a criminal action here, Ron Paul is just as guilty as everybody else in this one. He went along with it and violated the oath of office just like everybody else. But when
he's such a staunch proponent of that, and his actions really back it up from what I've been able to find out about him, except for this.
If you want my honest opinion about it, I think that the John Birch Society is so filled people with fear that they are willing to believe it without thinking it out. It's like you said, everybody's cheering and, oh, yeah, we stopped the Constitution. Okay, fine. Now, are they still cheering that now the Constitution has been vetoed and therefore $700 billion is coming their way?
If they look at it that way, I would hope that they're not cheering.
They had no problem about cheering up, like you said, in Minnesota, cheering about it in those days and thinking that it's all great and wonderful and fantastic that the Constitution got vetoed. That's exactly what John Birch Society is saying. Well, here's another part of the Constitution. The Constitution clearly states that Congress has the power to regulate Congress, not own it. Okay, so now they veto that, and they got Paulson is going to end up usurping the way that a piece of legislation is passed if this goes the way that he's talking about, where he has complete control over it.
Yeah.
Okay, there's another piece and so on and so forth. The point being that you're getting down to where key fundamental parts of the Constitution, of its structure, are being negated anymore. It's one thing when you talk...
ignored.
when you discuss, for example, that somebody comes in and says, okay, this freedom of speech, they vetoed the Constitution. You've heard that, and, you know, a lot of people talk about different things and so on and so forth. But that's an interpretive type situation. You know, I mean, one person's freedom of speech is another person's censorship. You can go back and forth and argue these. But it's quite different when you're discussing that, for example, the structural part of the Constitution is being nullified. Then you're talking
which
about
is what's
the,
happened here.
Right, which is what's happening and has happened. The Article 5 lawsuit started that. That was the first time in U.S. history that the courts went along with actually allowing the government to veto a structural part of the Constitution. And it was, you know, and I mean, they did it with a cavalier attitude and not even the concept. And now you've got people that have said that George Bush has illegally gone to war. I won't go into whether he has or not. You've got now the $700 billion. You've got all sorts of examples of the freedom of speech and so on and so forth that people have said are being denied, and they all started right after the lawsuit that I lost in 2000.
Yeah, I mean,
you can trace them right back in your timeline.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, I mean, I forget the guy's name, Gary's the quote guy here, but, you know, they said that, you know, the illegal is done right away, the unconstitutional takes a while. And I just wonder if your lawsuit and the actions afterwards didn't just verify to them that they don't need to wait so long. It really isn't going to take that long to do these things. You just have to do them. And the courts will go along with you.
Well, yeah, when the Supreme Court signed off on it without even a hearing. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that lawsuit, when it went to the Supreme Court, the court made a decision. They do read all of these briefs that are sent to them. They do make a decision. The decision most of the time, however, is that they simply are going to go along with the lower court. So,
yeah.
I mean, they made a conscious decision. This is not like, you know, one law clerk got in there and looked at it and said, no, we're not going to even hear this, and tossed it out. No, this does go before the justices. And true, recommendations are made by their law clerks and so on and so forth. But it's been reported by several justices. Oh, yeah, they read every single one of them. They read them over and the justices argue them. So, I mean, there was a decision made that they had no problem with Congress simply being able to veto the Constitution, because the language of Article 5 is the only thing that's ever been described by the founders as peremptory. I mean, everything else was not described as a legal term, but Article 5 was. The problem that we have now is that our structure of government is breaking down to the point that we are just going to become, I don't know what we're going to evolve into, most likely some kind of dictatorship. And
we're going to evolve into some fascist, socialist for the rich type of dictatorship from what the actions say.
Well, I put a video out on YouTube about Article 5, and I describe it as as velvet glove, iron fist.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem that you have here with vetoing the Constitution. Once the line had been crossed, that the court said, oh yeah, there's no problem here. It's a political question for Congress to decide. Well, it was never intended for Congress to decide, because the founders understood the danger of allowing them to be able to veto it. Yet the courts go, oh sure, they can go. And of course, where do the courts get the authority to make that decision? There's nothing that says that they have that authority in the Constitution. But the point...
No, because they violated their own oath of office by doing
right,
that.
Right. See, my own personal opinion is this. I think the reason that the Solicitor General of the United States waived and therefore acknowledged to be true and correct that A, it's a numeric count of states, that B, they are required to call, and it is peremptory, and C, that they had committed criminal action. These were the things that he waived and said, yes, that is true as to fact and law before the Supreme Court, is that he was afraid that if he did challenge them or did say, oh, no, they can do it, that he could be arrested himself. I think he was looking out for himself, so he waived it.
Huh. Why would he be arrested himself?
Sure, he's covered his own butt, basically, to put it in simple text. He just covered, he did a CYA. So he said, yeah, you're right. And that way, you see, he didn't violate his oath of office. He had supported the Constitution as it was stated. But and he left his clients hanging. Because no way would an attorney, under any other circumstance, go out and say, yeah, my client committed a crime. We admit it. I mean,
wow.
You know, that's what they did.
That is pretty dumbfounding, because it's beyond everything that they were ever taught in school.
Well,
you just don't do that.
To the point, the members of Congress, as a collective group, have gotten to the point that, personally, I think history is going to repeat itself. I think the American people are just going to all of a sudden rise up. It's just going to start. I don't know what's going to start it, but
it's going to happen. I mean, they've taken it too far now, and I mean, this economic situation is the perfect breeding ground for something like that to happen. I mean, as this progresses, you know, they have no choice. As long as they pursue this path of trying to uphold this system and prop up this system, they're going to have to start instituting more and more controls, more and more price controls, taking over more and more businesses, and you know, taxes, of course, are going to go up down the road at some point, and it's going to just keep on compounding, and it's going to get very out of hand if nobody stands up and stops it. I mean, you can look through history and see what happens to fiat currencies and see what happens to their countries as their currency fails.
Right.
History is definitely going to repeat itself. We're dead on track to repeat itself. And at some point, yes, the American people are going to have to stand up. That's
and
the only way that they're going to stop getting ripped off. And it has to happen. Because otherwise they will just, you know, run a street into slavery. And
you know what's funny about it, what an Article 5 convention is that the founders realized all this, and they gave us a peaceful, constitutional, legal method whereby people could do this without having to resort to violence, riots, poverty.
And beyond that, they placed right in the Constitution that we need to stay away from fiat currencies.
Yeah,
it's right there.
There is a lot of you know, these founders were a lot smarter people than a lot of people. You know, don't let the powdered wigs and weird looking pants fool you. They were smart people. And
no, they were brilliant. I read about them, and I'm just dumbfounded at their brilliance. The amount of knowledge that they had, and you have to think and understand that they didn't have internet, they didn't have TV, they didn't have radio. These people had to search out this knowledge.
A lot of them spent their whole life doing it. Right.
Yes.
And so for
the amount of knowledge that they had is just absolutely amazing and deserves the utmost respect in my mind. I don't know that there are very many people alive in the world today that have the knowledge that they have because of putting in so much work. I mean, they truly had to really work hard to gain that knowledge that they had. It wasn't something that was readily
more
available.
More importantly, and here's the difference between the founders and the Congress. The founders and the people that came afterwards for several generations, they had integrity that put the nation before themselves. I mean, that's the bottom line. You could go up, in my own personal opinion, and this is again my own personal opinion, I think you could go up in clear up into the 60s of this last century and still have that attitude of nation first, politics second, but not anymore. I mean, you hear a report about the President of the United States calls an emergency meeting to bring in the two candidates running for president to deal with a national crisis.
Uh-huh.
And out comes the basic story that apparently everybody's agreeing to, that these two leaders, who both, by the way, violated the Constitution, both Obama and McCain were part of this lawsuit, these two national leaders are more worried about scoring debating points inside this meeting than they are resolving the issue, and eventually people walk out. Now, who's at fault doesn't matter. Point is, they were more worried about themselves politically than the good and the welfare of the nation.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why the Congress won't call this, because they're more worried about losing their political power than they are doing what's good for the nation.
That's why we have this problem to begin with, because it's all about them trying to maintain their power.
Right.
I mean, a lot of this would have never come to fruition if we hadn't had that situation. So many of these bills, especially these last minute right before an election, I mean, come on. Which way are they going to vote? It all depends on what they think their chances of getting reelected are. And some aren't even worried about that, because they look at the statistics that 90% of the time they're going to make it anyways.
Right. And who cares, frankly and bluntly, who cares about them getting elected when you're dealing with issues like this? I mean, this issue is not something that started like last week. I mean, as far as this crisis, this started back in the mid '90s, according to reports I've heard. You know, with redlining,
started
and outlawed,
in 1913 with the Fed, but
well, yeah, you can go. But the point being that you see,
If you have these issues and you had a convention and you had the conventions that went along, as they became problems, they could have been addressed. Either way, you could have, for example, let's take the Fed. Rather than just being created out of legislation with no constitutional authority, because essentially what you're talking about is it's the Bank of America, it's the Bank of the United States again, which they got rid of back in the 1800s. But be that as it may, if there were a convention, the issue, I'm sure, of a Federal Reserve Act and Federal Reserve authority could have been discussed. It would have put it on a much different basis than what it exists now. And,
oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, it just would have. It would have made it clearly
would have
part
been looking,
of
the people would have been presenting the history of central banks and the history of fiat currencies and all that, and it would be a whole different way of looking at it rather than
right.
what we're looking at.
But
and,
now
I mean,
you would be
looking at the history of it.
But you see now. Because the Congress has ignored this and gotten to the point that they're just out of control. And the problem is that the rest of the world is getting tired. I listen to several blogs that are from England and France and places like this where they talk about the United States. And almost universally, they are just plain angry at the United States, not so mm-hmm. much for this particular problem, but that the United States is simply just not the United States it used to be. And
oh, yeah.
again, you start tracing it back, and they all start talking back in that general area right around where that lawsuit was. Big surprise, you know. And it's the funniest thing to me is that a lawsuit, which practically nobody's ever heard of, may end up being the thing that will eventually topple this whole nation, and yet I would be willing to bet you there isn't 150 people, except the John Birch Society, who's sitting there cheering the fact that the Constitution has been vetoed. But I bet you if you went up to some part of that they were supported, I bet you they'd be, oh, no, you can't do that. Well, yeah, and you supported it, because it's all in mm-hmm. Constitution. It's all intertied, and once you've undone a string and let out a seam and rip something open where you've let that what's inside start to flow out, it's just going to keep tearing. And, you know, this is what's the tragic thing about an Article 5 convention. It was designed to do the exact opposite of what's happened to it. It was designed to keep the government under control so it wouldn't do runaway things like this.
Yeah.
And instead, we're sitting here sitting on the brink of economic disaster. And we didn't have to be here. And that's what's really tragic about all this. We didn't have to be here, because if we'd have obeyed the Constitution, if we'd make Congress call an Article 5 convention, we could still take care of the problem. We might not get out of recession or even a depression, but we could pass amendments that make sure it never happened again. Because why?
The issue is that, you know, we're no matter how they keep on throwing money at the top of this problem, it's not going to avoid a recession or a depression. It's just going to make sure that they have the money, the people at the top have enough money to come in and buy everything up, pennies on the dollar, and walk away so much richer in the end, while the average person is basically, you know, sold into economic slavery. And we're going to be slaves of China and Russia and the rest of the world because they own our debt.
Yes, and you know why that they're so powerful? Do you know why they are?
Oh, well, because we've transferred all our wealth to them.
Oh, yeah, but do you know what allowed them to do that wealth? Do you know what they did?
No.
They held conventions back in the 80s and 90s and changed their economic system, both of them, China and Russia.
Okay.
Yeah, Russia changed its – Russia had a convention for its constitution and changed itself to a flat-rate income tax, where they got away from the old income tax system they had. Their economy took off. They did it in a convention. In fact, I believe in 1985, 1990, right in that range. I'd have to check. China had one. As funny as it sounds, Red China, you'd think of a convention, yet they did. And they actually changed some of their economic systems and so on and so forth. and granted, it wasn't like we envisioned with elections and everything, but it was a convention, and out of that came the massive economic strength that they've had. They had economic problems, they resolved them, they had conventions, and they're sitting where they are, and we're sitting where we are. Now,
wow.
Who started the convention idea? Why was the United States? Who's one of the few countries in the world today that has not had a convention to adjust itself? The United States.
Yeah,
we're sitting on a constitution that's 200 years old, and trying to run a, you know, I mean, I'm not mocking the Constitution when I say this, but structurally, I mean, I'm not talking about the rights and the things that most people talk about, but structurally, the Constitution hasn't had a change to it since 1804, memory serves. That was the 12th Amendment when they did a structural change. That was the last, discounting the part about the direct elections of the senators, because really that wasn't a structural change. You still had the senators and so on and so forth. If there had been a convention, you would have had direct election of the president and the vice president at the same time, which would have made a huge difference in the political structure. But that didn't happen because they didn't call one. The point being that we're dealing with 21st century issues with a business plan, because that's what the Constitution is, a social contract between the people and the government it creates, a contract that's over 200 years old, and nobody's ever gone in and looked at it and said, hey, you know, we could do some improvements here. Congress won't do it because it affects their political power. So the founders said, well, when you've got these kind of issues, you have a convention. Let the people have a chance to say it. But will the Congress do it? No. No, they'd rather sock us with $700 billion and say, lump it.
That's some scary stuff. We're down to 3 minutes here, maybe a little bit under. I want to give you a couple minutes to just say whatever you like and try to rally the people behind your cause and then direct them towards your website and any other information that you think is pertinent to them. So,
I appreciate that. What I'd like to urge everybody to do is during this election cycle is get to your member of Congress or senator who's running and flat out ask them why they joined a lawsuit to veto the Constitution of the United States, why they won't call an Article 5 convention, why they committed a criminal act, and see what their reaction is. I would guarantee that 90% of them will just try to avoid it if they can. Don't talk to their staff. Don't be satisfied with that. Go out and ask them. I mean, they made this decision. The federal laws involved say that they had to make this decision. They couldn't pass it off to some staff member. And realize that an Article 5 convention is nothing more than basically a committee meeting, and we have the intelligence, we have the integrity, we have the American people who have the brilliance. As a collective group, we can run a committee meeting. We can figure these problems out, but we can't do it if we're going to have a bunch of paid-off, self-interest politicians sitting there and basically stymieing the Constitution. There's a point where it's just simply going to fall apart, and sooner or later, everybody's going to be in a very deep, deep hole, and it's going to be because they didn't obey the Constitution, and the only way you're going to fix that is to force them to have to do it. It's not something that can be ignored or put off. It's got to be addressed, and sometimes it takes a crisis like this to bring people's attention to it, and I hope that people finally realize that if they don't start getting the government to obey the Constitution, it just won't be a Constitution, and then what are you going to do? Because ultimately, the question is going to be not they're violating my rights. The question is going to be, what rights?
Yeah, and that is the seriousness of it. Again, your website is foavc.org, Friends of Article 5 Convention.org.
Right, foavc.org, and you can read the text. We have over 450 of the applications already posted. We're working to get more. And we are putting the text up of the applications. You can read about the lawsuit. That's in the FAQs, and it's question 9.1. We tell a great deal of information. You can also hear talking about the John Birch Society, where the president of the John Birch Society has had to back down in writing and back away from what he talked about. And I would be more than happy to meet him face to face, but I'd lay you odds that he'd never face me.
I guarantee it. I'm sorry to cut you off here. We've got 20 seconds. I want to thank everybody for joining us. It's been great to talk with you again, Bill. I hope to hear from you and talk to you again. You're definitely welcome on our show at any time.
I want to
thank all of our listeners for tuning in and listening. I hope it's been a great show for you, and I hope you have a great week. And, call your senators and congressmen and complain about this bill. At least we can do that.
Thanks very much. Good talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Good talking to you. We're off the air now. Any time that you feel like talking with us or you want to, get something out there that you've got going on, feel free to drop us a line, and we'd be happy to have you on anytime.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day, and I hope that Gary is feeling better.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks.